Hi, I'm Grace McCarty of Bristol Academy, and you're listening to the Women's Football Podcast.
The Women's Football Podcast,
shining a light on the women's game.
Hi there, welcome to the Women's Football Podcast, episode 5, and thankfully Kieran is back alongside me. Hello mate, how you doing?
Hey.
Very good. I see you picked up the Swedish language whilst you were out there.
That's Swedish for hello, as was taught to me before I went out there. I do have one bone to pick of you though, the Andy Spence and Hamish show. I go away for a few weeks and I'm completely ousted.
Yeah, that happened.
I'm out in Sweden trying to gather news and watch some games, and you replace me instantly without a second thought.
Moving swiftly on.
Cheers.
We have plenty on the show today, including US international Yael Averbuch talking about life out in Sweden. Of course, she's been out there enjoying the Euros, as we all have. Grace McCarty has also been enjoying herself out in Kazan, Russia, where she picked up a gold medal in the World University Games. We'll have the usual NWSL roundup. Unfortunately, Emily cannot join us. She's a little bit under the weather, so Kieran's going to do his thing. And we will cover any other news in the world of women's football. So, let's get cracking.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Get involved via Facebook.
Facebook.com/WFpod.
Well, Kieran, only one place to start, isn't there? And that is the European Championships. Of course, won by Germany. But being an English-based podcast, we have to assess the English efforts out in Sweden.
Do we have to?
I'm afraid we do. A lot has obviously been written and said, and not all of it positive. And going out in the groups, it's hard to argue with that.
Yeah, well, first off, let's congratulate Germany. We've literally just watched the final, and you know, congratulations to them. Unlucky for Norway, missing two penalties, or should we say having two penalties saved by the impressive Angerer. But yeah, England, where do you start, mate? I think what we should point out initially is that, you know, we're not going to be pulling any punches, but at the same time, the gloves will probably stay on. I don't think this is an opportunity to start slagging people off. But yeah, I was out in Sweden. I watched all of England's group games, and I think there's not an awful lot more that can be added to what's already been said in the media. It really wasn't good enough, unfortunately, to progress beyond the group stages.
Let's look at that first game. Spain running out 3-2 winners with obviously that last gasp own goal from Karen Barnsley. What went wrong in that game?
I think we came up against a team that was underestimated, to be honest with you, mate. Very technically gifted. I mean, we spoke to Jen O'Neill in the last podcast, and she picked out Vera Bouquet and Jenny Hermoso as well. And they were absolutely superb, along with Adriana Martin, who plays for the New York Flash. They were technically superb, mate. They passed the ball well. They kept the ball well. And actually, you know, at times played England off the park. And despite being ranked, you know, considerably lower than England in the world rankings, they were the better side from start to finish.
I'm not going to run through all the group games because obviously that has been discussed quite a bit. But we talked to quite a few of the players, and obviously they're saying that the preparation was right. Perhaps that wasn't the case. You would expect England to at least, you know, get a decent result against a Spain side with the preparation done correctly.
Well, you would have hoped so, wouldn't you? And I think when we spoke to our experts before, we were all confident, as well as them, that we would get out of the group. And I think Jackie Oatley made the point that semi-finals would have been a good tournament for England. But to not get out of the group suggests that there are questions that need to be asked. One of the questions that was asked before the tournament started is, are we taking too many players that are coming back from injury? We mentioned at the time Casey Stoney, Karen Carney, Kelly Smith, Steph Houghton. Big players for England, but big players that hadn't played a lot of football going into the tournament. And was it too much of a risk to take those players? Looking back, it probably may have been.
I think you're right. And also, perhaps we didn't take the players that were in form, another talking point, pre-tournament. I think a great example, Tash Dowie, you know, Ellen White, I think she would hold her hands up and say that she wasn't at her effective best. To have a like-for-like replacement, a Tash Dowie who can play that lone role up front on her own, just would have been an extra option.
or someone to support Ellen. I'm not going to criticise Ellen too much, because I you see from the stands the amount of work that she does. She runs, she makes herself available, she gets into good positions, but unfortunately, when she got into those good positions, the ball wasn't always arriving to her. And if it was, it was being lumped up top, and she was having to win headers against defenders. And when she was winning them, there was not anyone near her. And maybe a Tash Dowie or a Jodie Taylor or someone of that mould would have been a good support striker for her to work alongside.
I think you're right. And obviously, another massive talking point was the introduction of youth and perhaps not using it to its fullest extent. An interesting quote from Hope Powell after the tournament. She said, some of the youngsters aren't ready to cope with that pressure. So that pressure of coming into a game where goals have to be scored, a game has to be turned around. But surely bringing on a Tony Duggan, a Jordan Nobbs, just that youthful energy maybe could have changed the way that the group unfolded for England.
Yeah, I agree. And don't forget that Tony Duggan and Jordan Nobbs have both won what could be considered a major tournament in winning the under-19 European Championships in 2009. So they're used to pressure games. They're used to playing in a big game, because they had to play in a big final 4 years ago. So they have been in that position. I'm not sure if that is the case. If Hope is saying that they weren't ready for a big occasion, then the question that has to be asked is, why take them?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, again, it's too many questions coming this tournament. I know we do this every single tournament that we do, men's and women's football. You know, we do love an autopsy in this country. But surely the biggest question of them all is, Hope Powell going to stay on?
Well, let me throw a question at you. You asked me a lot of questions. I'm going to throw one at you. I did some research before we came onto the podcast, and I looked at the squad that we took to Finland in 2009. Six of the squad at the time were playing in America. So they were playing in a professional league, which meant they were training every day, which meant that they were playing at a very, very high level. So one of the things Hope Powell said is that we need more investment in English football. It would be beneficial if English players were training 5 times a week or 5 days a week, whatever it might be. The question I'd throw to you then is, while we accept the WSL is raising the profile of the game in England, and while it is becoming more popular, is it sufficient in allowing the development of our national team, seeing as a lot of those players only train twice a week?
Well, that's a worrying question, isn't it, to be honest?
Hope Powell basically said, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, interesting to raise the point of more investment, considering we've got that 5-year plan that's only in its infancy at the moment. So I think, to answer your question, I think in time it will be, and I think in this country we aren't fully prepared to give things the allotted time that it needs. You know, women's football in this country is not just going to improve like that. You know, it needs to be a gradual thing. And you know, it's interesting to see the eventual winners, Germany. You know, they've got a league similar to the WSL in its structure, but they weren't afraid to put these youngsters into high-pressure situations.
No, and you look at the players that turned out for them. You know, Leonie Meyer's name was constantly mentioned throughout, and she was praised in the final. You look at Leopold's and a few others as well who've really stepped up to the plate, and these players are 19, 20 years old. And, you know, if they're willing to play them. Leonie Meyer actually made her competitive debut in the first group game.
That's so staggering, that, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And you look at how comfortable she was, it's frightening how good she's going to get at 19 years old. Germany does have a similar setup to us, but also Germany has that winning mentality. 6 European Championships in a row. It's an incredible statistic, isn't it?
It is. And let's have a look at the tournament as a whole. A lot of teams overachieving, and a lot of them from Scandinavia.
Yeah, I mean, I think Norway, the prime example, getting to the final. I think the expectation for them was probably to get to the quarterfinal. But we, you know, again, Jen O'Neill mentioned Ada Hegerberg, who obviously plays her football in Germany for Turbine Potsdam. Caroline Hansen, who was immense throughout, I thought. You know, they really stepped up to the plate. And, you know, the fact they beat Germany in the group stages meant that they probably had a slightly easier route to the final. But, you know, they earned that by winning the group. So they were fantastic, but I'm sure you have your teams to pick out as well.
Yeah, I've found myself watching Sweden quite a bit. Obviously, you tipped me off to a couple of their players, and I was just so impressed with the way that they could mesh technical ability with no reluctance to throw their weight around. They married those two styles very well. I thought Caroline Sager was tremendous in the middle of the park, certainly in the latter stages. I'll let you talk about the two strikers.
Shalani. Lotta Schelin and Kosovar Aslani.
I'm sorry about that. Who I christened
Shalani while I was out there combining the two names. Yeah, they worked really well. And tipping Lotta Schelin to be top scorer in the tournament was about the only thing that I got right beforehand. But I think you're right. I think technical ability, the players like Aslani and Schelin, and you picked out Okvist as well. And then having that steel behind them in the likes of Seager, and we can't not mention Neela Fisher.
She was fantastic.
Wasn't just solid at the back, but chipped in with some goals as well. So I think they became everyone's second team, didn't they? They were the host nation. People really embraced it. I saw that for myself when I was out in Linköping. You know, the fan zone where they set up a big screen was busy every time a Sweden game was on. The bars were always busy. You know, it was more difficult for us to get a table in a bar on the evenings that Sweden were playing, and I think everyone fell in love with them, and you know, while we congratulate Germany, I think everyone was devastated that Sweden went out in the semi-final.
So let's pick our five players of the tournament, and I think let's start with the Denmark goalkeeper Pedersen. She was tremendous.
Well, you look at the impact that she had. You know, Denmark were not really tipped to get too far in the tournament. They ended up getting into the latter stages, and you know, they deserved to, knocking out France in the quarterfinals and then obviously stumbling in the semis. But Pedersen played a huge part in that, didn't she? From the word off, you know, straight away in the first game, saving two penalties from Schelling and Aslani in the first game, she set out her stall pretty instantly, and she was tremendous throughout.
I'm going to put Fisher in there for the simple fact that you couldn't mark her. You just couldn't mark her. I mean, she scored plenty of goals in the tournament. Everything was aimed at her. Her movement was excellent at set pieces, and a fantastic ability to find the back of the net with headers and just getting a body part on it. So I'm going to put her in there.
Well, I'm going to put one that probably will surprise a few people, seeing as they massively underachieved, probably more than anyone, well, maybe other than England. And I'm going to put Louisa Nassib in there. And the reason I'm putting Louisa in is because of the way she absolutely ran the show against England. I've seen Louisa a couple of times in the flesh when she's played for Lyon, but her and Abeli, when they get going, are just, they're unstoppable, mate. And, you know, she chipped in that game with a wonderful goal as well, but Nassib is just a joy to watch. And while, okay, I'm maybe picking her for the wrong reason, I'm not necessarily picking her as one of the players of the tournament, but in terms of players that I saw in an individual game basis, Nassib was world-class against England, and that's why I have to go for her.
I think we've also got to go for the player that won Germany the tournament.
Yeah, Anja Mittag. Anja was in and out of the team throughout the tournament, which surprised me a little bit when you look at how she dominated the semi-final and certainly, you know, played in some of the group games. But she's got competition in that place. We've already mentioned some of the youngsters. Jennifer Marijan is a player that we haven't even mentioned, who's only in her early 20s. World-class player, and he's only going to get better. And obviously, Dumbarbi as well. Dumbarbi, there was big things expected of her. I think she, you know, maybe suffered a couple of injuries during the tournament, which meant that she wasn't able to play at her full capacity. But I think Anja is a worthy player to mention. Whether I'd pick her as one of my players of the tournament, I'm not too sure, but certainly worth a mention.
And let's just chuck an English player in there, just because it was a very miserable tournament for us. Let's put Tony Duggan in there, who proved that perhaps youth should have been given a chance a little bit earlier with a very neat and tidy finish against Russia.
Yeah, gave us one of our bright spots, didn't she? Goal that she scored.
She sure did. Of course, hit the bar earlier as well. And, yep. And then, you know, against France, I don't think anyone was at the races that day. But we'll put Duggan in there.
And Schelling. Got to put Schelling, top scorer, golden boot. Have to put her in there.
So there we go. And that's not the worst five-a-side team in the world, is it?
No, not at all. Not at all. Although, I think we could certainly give some teams a match with that one.
Right, well, the Euros also provided our topic for the tactics board, which I think, like me, I think we all certainly learned a lot during the couple of weeks. So let's have a look at the tactics board answers. Cass Gabe said, no matter how far our games come, we still have work to do. I'm going to agree with that, I think. I haven't been able to see a game on TV, yet every male Euro is televised. I think it's very difficult to compare the two if you look at the television deals for both. But obviously, in England, to have the Euros on BBC was fantastic. Ellie Gerhold definitely reinforced how fast the women's game is growing. Also shows how much the standard has improved. cannot argue with that. Sydney, thank you, Sydney. You've always got an answer for us on the tactics board. To expect the unexpected, absolutely. I don't think anyone saw France going out so early. Kimberly Jones, that even though some teams are lower ranked than others, they'll show up and put up a fight. Hashtag never give up. Do we dare mention England in that?
No.
No. And finally, Caitlin O'Neill, just simply put that I'm a big Sweden fan. Caitlin, so am I.
So am I. Big Sweden fan.
Absolutely. Right, now's the time for our first guest. And because we had her on the phone, we had to make sure that we got plenty out of her. So here's part one of my chat with Yael Averbush. Welcome to the Women's Football Podcast. You're obviously over in Sweden. Are you in catching up with the Euros?
Thanks. We're kind of in a pre-season training right now with Kopparberg, Gothenburg, which is my team. And we're very short on players because of the Euros. So I've been following all the games, gone to a couple live, and then the rest watching on TV after training sessions.
Obviously, a bit of mixed emotions for you. Anita Asante not doing so well, but your Swedish teammates doing very well.
Yeah, no, it was. I actually drove the 3.5 hours to watch one of Anita's games to support her, but now I'm actually happy to have her back with me here. But yeah, still watching and cheering on Sweden, and think it's been awesome, and the fans for Sweden have been really amazing. So every game that Sweden's involved in is just a great environment, so it's really exciting for them.
What's it been like sort of in the stadiums? You said you went to a few games.
Yeah, I went to one game in Linköping, which is kind of a smaller town, and it was a really, really cool environment. You know, nice stadium. I think it was a good size stadium, beautiful field, but there weren't tons of people. But then I actually went to watch Sweden play in Gothenburg against Denmark, and the stadium was packed. It was completely sold out. There were flags waving everywhere. It was, you know, the noise level was amazing. And so it's kind of been, there's been great support everywhere, but, you know, anytime Sweden's playing, it's just packed. And there's people, you know, outside all day preparing for the games in the fan zones. So there's a lot of excitement surrounding it.
How do European fans compare to American ones?
That's a tough question. I think it's kind of, it's been different, but I really appreciate and like the support and the respect for the game in Europe. Not that it doesn't exist in the U.S. It's definitely growing a lot in the U.S., but I think there's an appreciation in Europe that's just part of the culture, and it's a different feel than the U.S. You know, people kind of know game a little more and are really, really supportive of the women's game as well as the men's. So it's been kind of cool to see for me.
Obviously, we've mentioned one of the English girls out with you at Gothenburg, and being an English podcast, we have to ask about them. What have Jody and Anita added to the dressing room?
They're both, you know, great people and two of my best friends and teammates. Hilarious girls. I know I'm especially close with Anita. We have played back in New Jersey in the U.S. in the last league there, WPS, and then ended up here in Gothenburg together. And, you know, I play in the middle of midfield with Anita, and she's absolutely one of my favorite people ever to play with. And Jody as well. Jody's done amazing for us and come in and scored, you know, tons of goals. So we've really relied on her a lot this season. So, you know, they're irreplaceable friends.
How important has it been for you to have, you know, fellow English-speaking players with you?
Oh, it's been great. I mean, everyone in Sweden speaks really good English, so it's never a problem. But actually, it's been funny just having Anita gone and then Jody was away for a bit. The amount of English being spoken by my team in training and stuff went down to zero. So all of a sudden, I was stuck there trying to understand the Swedish. And I had to kind of remind them a few times, hey, guys, you know, you need to translate still. Because, you know, we had a small group of English speakers that got dwindled down to just me. So it was a little bit funny. But now that they're back, we're back to getting everything translated.
Oh, good, good, good. Obviously, you've been in Sweden quite a little while now. Are you sort of fairly settled now?
Yeah, you know, I finally feel like having come and gone a few times, you know, going home on the break, going on a few trips on time off and things like that, I kind of finally feel like this is home for me. You know, I have my own apartment and I've made some friends outside the team. So it's been really an interesting transition for me from first coming here and feeling like I'm in a long training camp and really only seeing my teammates, and then going home. I was actually staying in Anita's living room for a while on an extra bed. But now I kind of have established a life here, and I do feel like it's home.
What have you learned about yourself as a footballer during your time in Sweden?
I think I've really actually, I've learned a lot about myself, but I've also learned a lot about the game in general, and I've picked up a lot from watching and playing with my Swedish teammates. I think that the Swedish approach to the game, and this may be true for other areas of Europe, but it's very distinct compared to the American approach. And in Sweden, there's a tactical understanding and an understanding of timing and spacing on the field that I've taken a lot from. And there were things in my game that I never really thought about in terms of the timing of my movement and the weight of my passing and things like that, that I think I noticed my teammates are so, so good at. And there are things that I've really had to work on, and I can feel myself getting better at for sure, just through what we do in training and the way we play in the matches. So it's been a really interesting experience and a cool transition for me to feel myself getting better by learning from them.
Are they things that you can then take back to the US national team and apply to that team as well?
I think so. And it's something that I think will take time for me. But I think they are things that I will take with me in my game that I've hopefully, after playing here for a while and I still have a while more, you know, I will add to my game and they'll become part of who I am as opposed to just, you know, little aspects that I'm thinking about now. So I'm hoping I'll be able to, yes.
You obviously spent a little time in Russia as well, if I'm right. How was that?
Yeah, that was a really tough experience for me, to be honest. I didn't really know what to expect, and I had the opportunity to play in some Champions League games, so I thought, you know, that's not something I wanted to pass up. It was when the US League had been canceled for the year. So I kind of went over there not knowing what I was getting myself into, and I had a really tough time. There was some turmoil with the team, the club I went to, and then I thrown around a little bit, never had a place to live, had trouble getting the food that I usually eat and things like that, which are typical of being abroad at certain times, but, you know, I wasn't used to it. And I ended up, you know, not being 100% healthy and just really having a tough time adapting and being part of the environment there. So it was a learning experience for me, for sure, and I was only there for about a month, and then I came home. But then it kind of helped with my mindset of, you know, what kind of environment I want to be in the future, which was very different from the one I experienced.
Obviously, having been away from the States for a little while now, has your blog helped you kind of adapt to the different countries? It's a nice kind of tool to help you with that.
It's interesting. You know, I write so that other people can read it, but I also write a lot for myself because it helps me to organize my thoughts and kind of put into perspective what I'm doing. Sometimes I just go through my daily life not thinking too much about it, and I'll think, okay, it's time to write a blog, and I really have to sit down and think about, you know, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? What have I learned? How can this transcend the game and kind of apply to everyone's daily life as well as my own? So I definitely learned a lot from my blog, and I hope other people do too, but I realize, you know, even if no one else reads it, I enjoy writing it.
And obviously you're quite active on things like Twitter as well. Talk me through these challenges.
Yeah, you know, it's actually funny. That's another thing. I really enjoy making them. I know that a lot of youth players enjoy trying my challenges, but basically I was out in the backyard one day, kind of near my apartment here in Sweden, and I had a ball that some kid had left around, and I was kicking around a little, and I thought, you know what? I would have loved when I was younger to have someone kind of pose a little challenge for me, whether it was, you know, some type of trick or skill or something. So I thought, you know what? So let's see what this looks like if I film it. So, you know, I was out there for a while trying to get it perfect so it looked like to everyone else that I had done it perfectly first time, but of course I didn't. But, you know, it's a fun thing for me to do. These are, you know, I personally love to spend time with the ball. And over the years, I've developed my things I always do. I always try to do tricks and skills that I love to work on. So I figure, you know, in my free time here, why not share those with everyone else and see who I can inspire out there to try to do the same things.
I was going to ask you, actually, do you feel as a international player that you need to inspire that next generation?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of inspiration out there. And if you're looking to find it as a young player, you know, it's so available in this day and age through, like you said, Twitter, you know, YouTube, even Facebook, everything. It's so easy to interact with the players who are where you want to be. And sometimes I think, you know, wow, if I was a young player and I could just follow my idols on Twitter, that would have been so easy and so fun. But I also feel that it's our responsibility as current players to use those avenues to reach out to fans. And it's something I enjoy doing. I don't do it out of duty, but, you know, I love to, you know, if I can make someone's day or if I can respond to someone or watch some kid's video of her juggling a tennis ball and comment on it, I think, you know, those are things I love to do because I really appreciated that as a young player. So it's something I really enjoy, and I'm looking for more and more ways to reach out and do things like that.
So what were the things that helped you as a, you know, a really young player kind of trying to make her way in the game?
Yeah, I think I was very fortunate as a young player to have some wonderful coaches and mentors. Actually, a bunch of them happen to be from England, you'll be happy to know.
Excellent.
Yeah, there was a, you know, growing up in northern New Jersey, there was a huge influx of not only English, but a lot of coaches from other countries who, you know, they would kind of take me aside and teach me and kind of guided me along my path and showed me things to work on, because I was always very eager to, you know, train on my own and do whatever extra it was. But sometimes as a kid, you don't really know even what to do. So I think I was very fortunate to have people to show me the way, kind of, and also my parents. I mean, I can't leave them out. They were always extremely supportive, and they themselves, they were long distance runners, so they knew nothing about the game. But from them, I kind of saw, you know, they would go out every morning and do their running training. And so I kind of got the idea all through growing up that, you know, that's part of your life and your existence. You do your training, and that's, you know, something very rewarding in my family. And they've always kind of, they've learned the game with me along the way, but they've been extremely supportive through being role models as well as, you know, following me along my journey.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Follow the podcast on Twitter
at WFPod.
The break in the schedule for the WSL has allowed clubs to strengthen their playing hands. Kieran, pick out a couple of the major moves.
Yeah, I think, you know, the clubs obviously see it as an opportunity to scout and strengthen their squads for the second half of the WSL. There's been a bit of movement in and out. Let's have a quick scoop through the clubs and pick out some of the players that caught our eye. Arsenal ladies, you sometimes wonder, do they actually need to strengthen, because they are such a dominant side in the WSL. I mean, you said the NWSL.
Although they'd probably be quite good in that.
They would be good in the NWSL, yeah. Let's see how they get on. I'd love a world club competition. Winner of the NWSL against the winner of the WSL. How good would that be?
Yeah,
that would
absolutely
be awesome. Make it happen.
Probably getting a little bit sidetracked.
Yeah, though. Probably. Sorry. So yeah, Arsenal. Arsenal have brought in Scottish internationals Emma Mitchell and Caroline Weir. So obviously those are two experienced players that will no doubt add to the already strong squad that they've got. But they have announced that goalkeeper Becky Spencer has left the club, and Jenny Beattie as well, the Scottish international.
Surprised by Jenny?
A little bit. I mean, she signed for from Montpellier in France. Another opportunity to do my terrible French accent.
Brilliant.
but no, I think it's a good move for Jenny, believe it or
not.
How
do you say Jenny Beattie in French?
Jennifer Beattie.
Oh no.
Oh no, indeed. I was saying to a few people actually beforehand who are Arsenal fans, I think it was time for Jenny to move on. Jenny's been played in central defence, she's been played left back, she's been played up front at Arsenal. I think she needs to go to a club where she's going to find her position, find somewhere where she's going to be played consistently and can develop her game, because I think when you're moved around so much, versatility is obviously a key attribute to have, but I think sometimes it can work against your development. It doesn't allow you to sort of settle into a key position.
Well, particularly if you're doing it mid-game. The mindset just goes all
exactly
over the place.
So I think it's a good move for Jen, and we wish her well out in France. Birmingham have lost a keeper and gained a keeper. Jess Myers has signed from Chelsea, but Marie Hourihan has actually gone in the opposite direction to South London, or South West London even. Yeah, Marie Hourihan will join Chelsea, with Jess Myers going to Birmingham.
A lot of movement at Chelsea.
Yeah, lots. Obviously, we mentioned in the last podcast that Yuki Ajimi, the Japanese international, has joined the club, which is a massive coup. I mean, I think she's going to be a wonderful player to watch if she can settle down quickly absolute quality, you know, real technical ability. And we've seen the Japanese at the Olympics last year. We saw them win the World Cup in 2011. Saw them in the friendly at Burton, yeah, absolutely. And wonderful, wonderful players to watch.
However, it is very difficult to settle in this country, as we've seen by the two Icelandic players who have left.
Yeah, who've gone. Alina Vidarsdottir and Edda Gardarsdottir have both gone back to Iceland. Shame for them. Didn't see much of Edda. I'm not sure if she got injured early on, but saw Alina a few times. Took a little while to settle in by the looks of things.
And it's devastating for me, don't forget. I picked Edda as my one to watch for Chelsea.
You did, mate, you did. So you're going to have to eat your words on that, yeah, one, I'm afraid. But Chelsea have also signed Sophie Fogarty from QPR as well. So they've strengthened in that area. But they've also lost a couple. We mentioned Alina and Edda, but they've also lost Kate Longhurst, the striker, who has gone to Liverpool Ladies.
Oh, surprise, surprise. Liverpool Ladies have made a signing.
Yeah,
wow.
Gone to join her old boss, Matt Beard, in Liverpool. So, good signing for them. Obviously, they've had Tash Dowie firing in the goals, but Kate will add some much-needed support, I'm sure. We'll move on to Doncaster Rovers. They have signed Danielle Cox and Rhiannon Roberts from...
Blackburn Rovers.
Blackburn Rovers, yeah, they have. So, two additions from the Premier League North side. Everton... No players coming in, but Julie Nelson, who they only signed prior to the season beginning, has left the club. She has joined Glasgow City, and Lizzie Jurak is due to go and continue her studies out in America at Harvard.
Yeah,
so
fantastic.
What a bright girl she must be.
I'm sure we'll see her popping up in the NWSL, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. Possibility. Lincoln Ladies have made a few signings. They've brought in Lara Faye, from Chelsea. They've also brought in Lily Bilson from Liverpool, so Liverpool gaining one striker and losing another. And finally, moving on to Liverpool, they've made a few signings as well as Kate Longhurst. They have also signed Sarah Gregorius from Bad Neuner in Germany.
New Zealand international.
Yep, and they've also signed Ellie Stewart from Everton's Centre of Excellence.
Yeah, that's a painful one. We'll move on.
So that's the transfers that have been made in the WSL, but there's also been a couple that have caught our eye elsewhere as well, haven't there?
Absolutely. You're going to look at me like I know what they are. Dive in, lad. There's been a few in Germany, hasn't
there? Yeah, there has. I think the biggest one, certainly the one that's maybe going to boost the football in Australia, is Nadine Angerer, who's obviously just won the European Championship, of course, with Germany.
Single-handedly
saving two penalties.
Right, sorry, Germany, that's a bit disrespectful.
Yeah, no, but she's signed for Brisbane Roar out in Australia, so a big coup for the Aussies. And I know that our friends at the women's game are particularly excited about that move, because with the Australian season starting up soon, having players like Nadine can only raise the profile of the game. And also Dembabi, the German striker who we mentioned earlier, she has moved from Bad Neuner to Frankfurt, I believe. I also heard that Leonie Meyer has moved to Bayern Munich, so... Certainly some interesting moves between German clubs.
Fantastic. Right, let's have a little look at the, not the NWSL, the WSL. We're at the halfway stage, obviously. Liverpool and Bristol leading the way.
Yeah, I think when we look at the halfway point, we would have expected Arsenal to be up there, but combination of a couple of losses at the start of the season, and also one loss against Liverpool, a draw away at Lincoln. And also they haven't played as many games as some of the other teams, so they haven't managed to get themselves up to the top half of the table. But with games in hand, you'd expect them to catch the two at the top. But yeah, Liverpool and Bristol especially, have been fantastic, haven't they? I think when we look at what they've achieved and on the budget that they've got and the players that they've brought in, I think they've been fantastic and they've been a joy to watch as well.
Yeah, I suppose we have to talk about Liverpool, don't we? Because they've done very well. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
From an Everton perspective, I'm sure you don't, so I'll take this one on.
Thanks.
Yeah, what can you say? Brought in a lot of players, moulded them very quickly. Credit to Matt Beard for doing that. I think when you bring in so many new faces, it can go one way or the other. It can take a long time to gel, and you can find yourself at the bottom of the league and finding it a struggle to catch up with the teams above you. Or you mould them together very quickly, and when you've got quality like Farrah Williams and Gemma Bonner and all these other players, Amanda Da Costa and Whitney Ingen, you know, they are going to produce results for you.
They sure did. Whooped us in the derby. Thanks, Kieran. I'd almost forgotten about that.
Yeah, no, sorry about that, mate. So you have to give them a pat on the back. And the question now is, can they maintain it? And, you know, they are the team that everyone is gunning for now.
Absolutely. Right. The WSL provided plenty of players for Team GB's women's side out in Kazan, Russia, for the World University Games. And we only went and won a gold medal. Not a problem.
No,
so,
we
did. You caught up with Grace McCatty, who obviously played her part. How was she, all right?
She was great. And rather than me tell you how great she was, let's have a listen.
Okay, so I'm joined by Bristol Academy's Grace McCatty, who has just returned from Kazan in Russia with a nice shiny gold medal around her neck. Grace, thank you for joining us on the Women's Football Podcast. First of all, tell us, how does it feel to have that gold medal wrapped around your neck?
It feels pretty surreal. I think or any football tournament, any game you play, you set out to win. But to actually come back with gold, hang around my neck, as cliche as it sounds, it is kind of what dreams are made of. And it's pretty surreal. But every time I look at it, I remember that we did actually go away and we did beat all those other nations to come away as gold medalists.
You had some major ups and downs during the course of the tournament. How do you manage that? How do you deal with such emotions throughout the tournament?
Yeah, the tournament itself lasted over a space of 2 weeks. We had a game every other day for 12 days. And I think as much as losing games hurts or winning games, you're on a high, you have to learn to deal with those emotions pretty quickly, because 2 days later, you're going back into another fixture, which is a must-win game. So obviously we had a bit of up and down on our journey to gold, but it was just a matter of dealing with things, dealing with our emotions, kind of closing the book on one game to then focus on the next, because it was a really quick turnaround between games.
Yeah, absolutely. You had a really strong squad, didn't you? A number of WSL players. Going into the tournament, were you all pretty confident that you could come away first place?
Yeah, the squad this year is probably the strongest squad the team has ever had. And when we met up, we obviously set our sights on gold, and we were pretty confident that if we could go out and perform and do what as well as we know we could, that we could come away with gold. But to actually do it, obviously, is pretty surreal. But yeah, we had a really good squad with a number of players across WSL clubs, and the majority of the squad are England under-23s internationals. So I think that experience helps as well.
Yes, absolutely. You won your first group game. You lost your second one to Japan. You went into the last group game against Estonia needing a win. You're going out on goal difference, and you score twice late to go through. How did you feel, you know, knowing that you were so close to going out and coming home early?
It was strange, because on the pitch, all we knew is that we had to win and we had to score as many goals as we could. Little did we know until the final whistle, when we came off, we got told what the situation was. So we were like, we need to score. And it's one of those games that we created chance after chance after chance, but we just couldn't score. Going in at half-time 2-1 up, we knew we had to go out and score a lot more. So a few changes were made and we set out, obviously, to try and win. But it literally didn't happen to the last 5 minutes, when we obviously got the two goals, which in the end sent us through on one goal difference. But yeah, we didn't really know the situation that much when we were on the pitch.
That must have been pretty incredible for, you know, in terms of getting through in such, you know, dramatic style. It obviously meant that you played the Republic of Ireland in the quarterfinals and you overcame them quite comfortably 8-0. It was then Brazil in the semi-finals. What sort of a test was that?
For us, it was, because we'd already played Brazil in the group game, it was a bit of a challenge, because it was easy to go into the game with a mentality that we've already beaten them. Mm. It's going to be easy. We've just got to do the job again. But it was a completely different test. And Brazil obviously wanted kind of defeat from the time, revenge from the time we'd beaten them before. So it was a challenge, and we only beat them 1-0. But in the end, like, fair play to them. They made it hard for us. But I'd say the better team won on the day.
And then an absolutely incredible final against the Mexicans, 2-2 going into the last 10 minutes, and then four goals to win 6-2. I mean, you've mentioned the word surreal a couple of times already. Does it get much more surreal than that?
No, it doesn't. Like, when people look in and see the score, 6-2, they say, oh, it must have been an easy game. But to be there and to be part of it was unbelievable. Obviously, 80th minute, 2-all, we thought it was going to penalties, but I think fitness and just the determination to keep going kind of shone through at the end, because we got one goal and we could have stopped them, but we went and got another one and got another one and got another one. And I think by that time, the Mexicans were a bit deflated. 87th minute in, we're 5-2 up, and yeah, it was only ever going to be us one winner come the 90 minute.
Explain what your first feeling and emotion was when the final whistle went.
It was crazy. We just all got together and celebrated. It's one of those things that it's easy to set out to say you're going to do something, but to actually do it and to know that we'd done it was unbelievable. And the way that we all celebrated together, all 20 players of us and the staff, kind of shows the team spirit and shows that every single person had a part to play to get us to that place. And whether you played 1 minute or all six games, that everyone was crucial in that. So I think the celebration showed that, because we all came together and, yeah, absolute joy.
It's quite an incredible achievement. How often do the team actually get to play together? Because you all represent your own clubs and your own universities, but how often does the Team GB women's team actually get to play together?
Yeah, we only came together for tournament. So we met up in England on the 21st of June and we spent 6 days in Warwick, which was tied in with an England under-23s camp. And that was the first time we had came together as a squad. Obviously, a lot of us knew each other from playing in WSL and playing with England, but that was the first time we had come together as a squad. So we spent those 6 days together, and then we met up on the Friday before flying to Moscow, and we had two extra players join us on that day, which completed our squad of 20. So we only had 6 days together, and then we had 4 days in Moscow when we were actually together as a 20-player squad. So going into the tournament, we had only ever had 4 days as a complete squad to prepare ourselves. So as you can imagine, that was a challenge in itself.
So what's the sort of key thing to making the team gel and mould quite quickly? I mean, tell us about some of the off-field antics and banter that goes on.
Yeah, I think when you're spending that long with the same people, from the start, we just knew that we had to get along. So we kind of identified players as a bit of a team building exercise. So we had to identify players that we didn't know that well, people that we didn't know. And our challenge was that come the following week, we'd know them a lot better. Because I think it was important that every player in the squad felt part of it. If the quieter ones obviously felt comfortable around the more loud ones. And it was important that we had that off-field banter to kind of create that. So we had different challenges that we'd done, team building exercises in Moscow. And you just kind of learn to entertain yourself. But it's those off-field kind of antics as such that kind of mould you as a team and help you get to create one team, really.
Who's the joker in the pack?
The joker... Izzy Christiansen from Birmingham, without a doubt, provided endless entertainment every day. And yeah, she's definitely was a really positive character to have in the team. Always making us laugh, always making us see the lights, like the good side of the situation. And I think it helped a lot having that kind of character around.
And who's the biggest moaner?
Biggest moaner? Oh, that's a good question. I'm trying to think now. Ooh. I don't know if there was particularly one. I think as the tournament went on, a lot more people got more tired. I think the bone inside come out a bit, but you kind of learn that in that moment it's not personal, it's just because they're tired and you've got to kind of give them their space to recover and relax, because sometimes you can kind of get cabin fever. Yeah. Being spent in the same place with the same people for that amount of time, it can get a bit cabin fever. But we learn that sometimes if people wanted to go for a walk on their own, you just let them. Yeah. Because then it kind of adds to what we're trying to create, really.
Okay, final question. Who celebrated the hardest after the win?
The hardest? Oh, good question. I'd say Ashley Baker, our goalkeeper, definitely celebrated the hardest. Yeah, and if you saw the next day, you would have understood why. I think it was worth said, we were in Russia and we won a gold medal, and how often are we ever going to return there and do it again? Probably not at all. So it's definitely something we want to make the most of and enjoy every moment of it.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Superb achievement. Grace, thank you very much for joining us on the Women's Football Podcast. Congratulations once again on your gold medal and the best of luck for the second half of the season with Bristol Academy.
Thank you.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Listen to the podcast via SoundCloud.
SoundCloud.com/WFpod.
Right, let's switch across the pond and have a look at the NWSL. And it's only a month ago that playoff picture's coming together.
I know, only a month, mate. I can't believe how quickly it's gone and how many late nights I've had, but it only feels like yesterday since we were previewing the teams. But yeah, only a month left. All finishes on the 31st of August.
Yeah, I personally prefer sleeping.
Hey, well, one of us has got to stay up, otherwise how are we going to cover it?
Yeah, true. Thanks. Anyway, our Brits are doing the business.
Yeah, they are. We obviously keep tabs on Jess Fishlock and Leanne Sanderson, and Jess is currently playing in an improving Seattle side, thanks to largely to players coming into form and obviously the return of Megan Rapinoe and Hope Solo coming into the side as well. A few trades that have taken place. But yeah, Jess is still a major influence on the side. And I think, you know, if you read her blog, is obviously something that we launched a few weeks ago, which we'll give in more detail later. You will see the comments underneath. She is very popular in Seattle. And I think when you look at her tenacious attitude, her work rate, you know, she has been taken to the Seattle Hearts. So definitely doing the business out there, as I said, improving in results. And too late for them probably to get a playoff place, but Jess has certainly played her part.
I'm just going to jump in quickly, actually. One thing I do love about the American leagues, you know, the NWSL and the MLS, is the trade system. You know, you look at Seattle, weren't doing too well, traded beautifully, and now things have turned around from, you know, a fantastic use of a transfer system that I wouldn't mind seeing in England, you know?
Yeah, I think the issue you've got there is you're going to have teams that are probably going to complain that, you know, one trade isn't fair and another one is. So it's difficult. And we obviously don't have a draft system here. I think when you look at some of the trades that take place, it's often for a player and a number of draft picks. Yeah, we just don't have that system over here. That's why it works so wonderfully in the States. But yeah, I agree. I think it's a great system, but we will never see it over here the way the league is set up. But, you know, looking at Boston and Leanne Sanderson, Boston's results have been up and down. They've been indifferent, but they, when you've got someone like Sydney Leroux playing up front, you're always going to have a threat.
10 goals, isn't she?
10 goals, yeah. 10 goals Fantastic. This season. Yeah, you've done your research, mate. Well
Thanks.
Done. But Leanne's done really well, mate. I think she's scored a few goals. She's got 7 assists, which...
that's excellent for a striker.
Yeah, at one point, mate, she was leading the way. She was leading the way in the assist column, but there are other players that have caught up. But she's been fantastic, mate. She's been a real influence. Good players around her. And I think it's certainly, you know, a player that we can be proud of. And it's a shame that she can't be involved or won't be involved in the England squad anytime soon.
Well, one player who is certainly doing the business for the Americans is Lauren Chaney.
Lauren Holiday.
Whatever you call her, goal machine, whatever.
Lauren Holiday, congratulations to Lauren, who obviously got married a few
Absolutely.
Weeks ago. Lauren has been outstanding, mate. I have stayed up and watched a few FC Kansas City games, and for me, at this stage, if you put a gun to my head and asked me to pick a player of the year in the NWSL, Lauren Holiday would get it for me, hands down. There have been some wonderful players to watch in the NWSL, and that's actually one of the reasons why I have no issue staying up late to watch these games. It's high tempo, it's quick, it's technical. There's so many elements of the game that are there in the American League that I think a lot of other leagues will look to emulate. But Lauren Holiday has been absolutely unbelievable, and I think she's been a major reason why, at the time of recording, FC Kansas City find themselves at the top of the league. She's been a major influence. And I've thoroughly enjoyed watching her and her American teammates across the league.
Do you see Kansas taking it?
It's difficult. Portland have got games in hand, as again, at the time of recording. And when you've got Alex Morgan and Christine Sinclair and Tobin Heath in that side,
it's frightening,
mate. And I think, you know, if we were honest, it was the team that we looked at the start of the season and thought they are going to be contenders. And it's difficult to see past them with the games in hand that they've got. But Kansas City are there. Sky Blue FC. Sky Blue have been really good. I've been impressed with them as well. It's difficult. It's really difficult. And obviously the system out there is different. The top four go into a playoff system. And then, you know, the team finishing fourth could end up in an NWSL champion.
Yeah,
so,
I'm not having that, by the way.
You're not having that.
I'll take the draft system. I'm not having the end of season playoffs. If you finish top, you deserve to win.
Yeah, but the teams know that before the season starts, don't they?
Yeah,
and
no,
it works. And it works the same across American sports. I mean, I'm a big fan of American football, and it's the same system there. The team that comes out on top across the 32 teams doesn't necessarily go on to win the Super Bowl. So the teams know the system before the league starts. And, you know, if the team finishing fourth is able to turn up in the playoffs and really show their class, then in my opinion, they deserve to be champions. You know, we have a playoff system similar to that in men's football here.
Well, you and I know that very well.
Well, we're both Watford fans, aren't we? We finished third in the English Championship, which is the second tier of men's football, and we didn't go up to the Premier League. You know, Crystal Palace, who finished
Painfully below
us, are now in the Premier League. So, anyway, we don't talk about men's football on this podcast. Sorry, swear words, no men's football.
Anyway, let's move on quickly. Another person who's very, very keen on the NWSL is Yale Ava Butch.
Ava Bush.
I'm sorry, Yale. I've struggled with that ever since I interviewed you, I'll be honest. But anyway, here's part two of my chat with Yale. Let's talk about the US team. Obviously, recently, a very special moment for Abby Wambach. Must have been brilliant for you to be a part of that moment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny. As I was sitting on the bench talking with a couple of the other players, and we thought, you know, after she scored one goal, we said, oh, you know, maybe it'll be today. She'll break the record. You know, then she scored another, and we said, oh, wow, it really might happen. And I was actually I got really nervous. I don't even know why. I think it was maybe on her behalf or just because I was involved in the situation. And one of the administrators of our team came over and said, you know, oh, if she scores again and breaks the record, you can run on the field. And so then we were really, really nervous on the bench thinking, you know, oh, wow, that we have to be involved in this moment. We actually get to go out there. So, I mean, I had so much adrenaline just on her behalf. And I think that also the fact the game was in New Jersey, which is kind of a home game for me, and the stadium was pretty full, it was packed. It was just a really, really special night. And then to top that off, the fact that I got to go into the game and even step on the field that night was just like pretty much overwhelming. That was just an extra bonus. But yeah, being there was really, really special.
What was she like sort of directly after the game?
You know, Abby, I have so much respect for Abby because she is so humble about her accomplishments, but at the same time, she doesn't belittle them. I think it's so easy to either be, you know, overly excited and kind of forget about who got you there. And it's also easy to say, oh, no, it was nothing. But it's not nothing. That's a huge accomplishment. And Abby is so wonderful at being appreciative of what she's done, but at the same time acknowledging the fact that she couldn't have done it without her teammates and the people who have helped to get her there. So she seemed pretty composed, actually, but you could tell she was really, really proud and happy, as she should have been. So it was special to, you know, to see how she reacted to that, because I always respect her reactions. She's won so many huge things and has so many wonderful accomplishments, and the way she reacts to them, I think, is, you know, so classy.
I mean, football in the United States seems to be in great health at the moment. That must be quite pleasing for you.
Yeah, I think it's doing well. You know, our struggle is always to keep a good professional league. And I think that it's never really in the clear until there's a league for 10 years. You know, I'll always be kind of concerned about it. And it's something that I'm highly invested in, although I'm not playing there right now. But it was pretty devastating for us all when WPS folded after 3 years. So I think that although the national team is always successful and there's a lot of hype around the game, you know, a lot of the stars now have become kind of celebrities in pop culture even, I think that the next challenge and the stress we all feel is to keep the NWSL, the new league, alive and well, because so many of the women's leagues in Europe now are doing well and have established themselves over the years, and that's our next step.
Do you manage to catch a few of the NWSL games?
Yeah, I think it's been wonderful. They stream a lot of them online. So I've actually, if I can stay up late enough here in Sweden, I've been able to watch them online. That's when my Wi-Fi cooperates. But, and then I was home for summer break and I went to 2 games, which it always looks different live. So that was important to me. I went to see Sky Blue play Portland, and then Sky Blue again when they played against DC. So I've tried to kind of check it out, see what's going on, what each team looks like, as much as I'm able to.
And is that a league that perhaps might attract you at some stage?
Yeah. I mean, it's always been my dream to play at home. But at the same time, I've had an amazing experience in Europe, and I still feel like I have a lot to learn from the European style in general. So I absolutely eventually would love to play in the U.S. When that will be, I'm not quite sure yet. But I'm hoping to see the league continue to flourish and grow, and I would love to be part of it eventually.
So what else does the future hold for you?
The future for me? You know, it's funny. I joke with my friends, who a bunch of them are women's professional footballers as well, and we always say to each other, you know, it's crazy. We can never plan anything in our life. It's really true. I honestly never know what's next for me. And you know, I have ideas. I try to make plans, but pretty much have to go with the flow, which is not easy for someone with my personality. You know, playing wise, I'm not quite sure. Obviously, My plan is to play professionally for as long as I can. I try to do crazy things. I do yoga, I foam roll, I do everything possible so that my body can last for hopefully years to come. I also, though, am continuing to get involved more and more with the writing, coaching, individual training, even some speaking related to the game, because those are things I really enjoy and things I want to build on eventually one day. So I really always want to be involved with the game, and I'm continuing to find avenues to do that in addition to playing, because I realize, maybe I can play till I'm in my late 30s, in my dream world, 40 maybe.
The Women's Football Podcast,
shining a light on the women's game.
So there we go. That was the second half of the interview with Yael.
Ava Bush.
Thanks. And that is the conclusion of episode 5. We should run down the ways that you can contact us, Kieran.
Yeah, no worries, seeing as you forgot to do it last time out.
Sure did.
You can contact us on Twitter. We're on @WFPod. We're also on Facebook. We're on facebook.com/WFPod. And if you'd like to email us, we are on thewfpod@gmail.com. And also, I think, Hamish, you've got to tell people about a new site that we've launched.
Yeah, absolutely. Very excited to officially announce on the pod the WF blog. We have handpicked some of the finest scribes in the world of women's football.
Which doesn't include us.
No, not yet anyway.
Yeah.
But no, we've got people like Megan Rapinoe, Alicia Ferguson, who has been working, of course, behind the scenes at the BBC, the coverage of the Euros. Very, very interesting blog. Check it out. Jess Fishlock is on there. Tash Harding from Bristol Academy is on there. Sal Shippard and Matilda. A fantastic collection of people, which hopefully is only going to expand. We're in discussions with plenty of players and staff. So hopefully we will continue bringing more and more blogs to that. And you can find that at thewfblog.wordpress.com. Kieran, another thing we have to mention is we've got a survey that we'd like everyone to give 5 minutes of the time, literally 5 minutes of their time, just to have their say on everything women's football, and you'll be able to find that on our Twitter and Facebook feeds. Right, that's all. Kieran, say goodbye.
Hey, door.
Nice one. Bit more Swedish, was that?
Little bit.
Lovely. That's enough for that. Euros are finished.
I know, but,
good stuff. Right, see you later, all.
The Women's Football Podcast,
shining a light on the women's game.